You and Arthur remember this, but sometimes
let's call the meeting of the committee or the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum. First order of business would be the approval of the minutes. If anyone has had a chance to peruse them, I'd entertain a motion to that effect.
Mr. Chair, I actually have read the minutes. I sat here that long, so I do move approval of the minutes for March 2nd.
Thank you for pointing that out, Representative Brainerd. We have the motion before us. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor of their adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Minutes are adopted. Representative Welty, thank you for your patience on Monday. I want to apologize again. I didn't realize we were going to have quite such an extended discussion on the other bill, but if you want to proceed with what you have to tell us with your testifiers, members, I should remind you that Representative Welty intends this to be basically an informational hearing. We'll lay the bill over, but I don't believe he has any intention of going beyond the input he can get from the committee at this time. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the members that are here, I see that we have a number of bills on the docket today, so I don't want to take up much more of your time. I, of course, laid out the issue in my testimony on Monday, and so with that, I would like to now see if there are people who want to testify in support or testify with concerns to the bill, and just get a full flavor of the issues that we must consider with House File 461 or a change to the affordability surcharge program in the future.
Representative Welty, if you we didn't officially move your bill in the last meeting, if you would want to make that motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move House File 461 for this
to be recommended to pass, and we will lay the bill over. We have on the agenda a couple of people that I think have asked to testify. Ms. Marshall, I don't know if she's here. There she is. Marshall, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Pam Marshall. I've directed the Energy Sense Coalition for the past 17 years, and most recently worked with utility representatives and regulatory officials and other stakeholders to craft the affordability program legislation and to help design those programs, and currently co-administer the affordability programs with both Excel Gas and Electric and CenterPoint's gas program. The legislation was passed a couple years ago, and the commission has since approved individual utility programs because we think they represent a mutual win among utility shareholders, ratepayers, and those who benefit directly from the affordability programs. It's important, I think, to remember that these programs require participating customers to make payments each and every month, both on their current bill and toward any past due bill. In exchange, participating customers are offered an affordable level of monthly payment and a matching credit toward their past due bills. It's been our experience so far that customers enrolled in the programs pay their bills more frequently because they can afford to do so. Those who do not make payments are removed from the program. Because the law requires the receipt of the Federal Energy Assistance Program in order to be eligible for these supplemental programs, we maximize both taxpayer and ratepayer funding sources. According to a recent Excel report, service disconnections for low-income customers enrolled in the program, or generally speaking, low-income customers dropped 25% after participating in the first year, and the monthly payment frequency increased 14.5%. Non-participant ratepayers, including the ones that are considered in the bill before you, contribute a small amount of money to keep participating customers connected to utility service rather than pay all of the associated costs of trying to collect money from them that they can't afford to pay, and when they can't, to disconnect them from service. Our concern about House File 461 is that the exemption is broad and is likely to result in further exemption requests. If there is a much more narrow concern raised by the affected customers, I think that we should address those concerns more specifically rather than change what appear to be successful programs that are currently operating in a pilot phase, to accommodate what I understand is a few customers of only one gas utility. A couple years ago, we passed this legislation with bipartisan support of members of this committee, and the rationale for doing that is the same as it is today. The programs make economic sense. They provide an important benefit to households that are struggling financially, but who are willing to pay what they can every month on their utility bill. And they hold down costs associated with collecting from people who have difficulty paying. As I said, the programs are currently operating as four-year pilots. We just entered the third full year in the CenterPoint program and have just entered the second full year in the Xcel Gas program and in Merck's program as well. I believe the programs maximize available resources and involve a mutual responsibility for their success, and that undermining them, particularly before they can be more thoroughly evaluated, will affect our ability to ensure that all utility customers can maintain access to service, which is precisely why they were passed in the first place. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Marshall? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Representative Lofty and Ms. Marshall. I'm trying to better understand. I've spoken to Representative Bly and Representative Welty about the bill and the program specifically, and I actually have a lot of questions, and so I'm going to ask kind of a, I'm not sure that the premise of my question is going to be accurate, so please correct me if it's not, but my belief is we have the LIHEAP program, and then we're running this parallel utility-by-utility affordability program now. Am I correct in that?
Ms. Marshall?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin, yes, it is a requirement for customers to participate in the utility programs to receive LIHEAP first, because the average natural gas LIHEAP grant is about $400. The average annual income for LIHEAP households in the state is about just over $15,000. That grant certainly helps, but it does not, it's a one-time grant, it does not address the ongoing affordability. And so what the gas affordability programs do is limit to 6% of household income the amount that customers devote to that bill. So if they get a LIHEAP grant, that buys down their annual bill by that much or goes toward the past due bill, and then what's left goes toward the buy down, and then the supplemental funds contribute to keeping the bills at the 6% of household income and are also used to match the copayment that participating customers make toward any past due bill they had when they entered the program. Only a fraction of each of the utility company's customers that get LIHEAP get these programs because the funding is limited for the program. Not everyone who gets LIHEAP is enrolled in these programs.
Representative Kalin.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Marshall, I am working to understand the whole complexities, and I know through working on SIP that conservation and heating assistance and all these things can be very complex funding streams and eligibility guidelines. But I guess I'm wondering, I mean, I think that going deeper and solving these structural problems is really important. And I appreciate the goal of the program to, in fact, the Chamber of Commerce and I were just talking about this, is that the 235,000 income eligible homes for LIHEAP in Minnesota for LIHEAP that don't get assistance. I very much appreciate that this program is helping to reach those, as well as the 165,000 that do get LIHEAP. But I'm wondering if this is the most efficient way to do a state match. If you could talk a little bit about the efficiency of the program, and maybe I have an idea about a better way to do this, but I want to hear your thoughts first on, is this an efficient way of doing this supplemental program?
This Marshall, before you respond to that, Representative Kalin, I'm not sure how this is related to Representative Welty's bill.
Maybe I'll... I think that it's a good question. I think what Representative Welty's bill is doing is recognizing that there's liability or a weakness in the not sure whether it's the implementation of the bill that Representative Bly carried, of the new program, or if it's a weakness in the bill in the program itself. And what I'm wondering is, would it be more efficient to, rather than start to carve out or provide more direction to the PUC, would it be more efficient to do a utility-wide assessment that, rather than having, as we do for SIP, utility differences, that then we just spent a lot of hard work going uphill in 2007 to bring them into standard standards across the state, whether it be easier to just have one state program that is paid for by an assessment?
Ms. Marshall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, sort of a huge question out there, but actually it's important to remember, if you recall my testimony, I said that we are beginning the third year of the CenterPoint case program and entering the second on Excel. The reason for the lag is because we spent 12 months in a utility rate case working out the design of the affordability programs that were enabled by this legislation. An enormous amount of scrutiny went into the design of those programs and ultimate commission approval, including annual reporting, an evaluation at the end of the four-year pilot term, where the commission could modify, extend, or discontinue these programs. And because there was so much time spent looking at the design of these, the gas utility programs are the same. They vary in terms of the overall amount of funding level because there are larger and smaller gas utilities, but the everything about the programs throughout the state is the same. And I believe that it is incredibly efficient because one of the things the commission is required is that they operate with 5% admin costs that's shared between both the organizations that are taking the applications, Energy Sense and, in Merck's case, HeatShare, Salvation Army's HeatShare program. They're administered very cheaply. There are mechanisms in place because there is already the Excel electric program that is the complement to the gas program. And I think that, unfortunately, the issue here, it seems that two customers don't enjoy paying for it. And I don't think we should change programs that are in midstream, and the evaluation that has taken place to date shows that they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do in order to exempt a couple of customers and watch the tariff sheets fly at the commission and go through what is, you know, in my opinion, a waste of resources to reinvent something that's taken a long time to get to where it is right now. It was in a rate case. The department was adding input to that. The commission staff added input to it, and that's why we have the same model program throughout the gas utilities.
There are further questions for Ms. Marshall. Seeing none, Ms. Marshall, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we have Mr. Boland, that also wishes to testify. Mr. Boland, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat Boland from Xcel Energy. I will be brief. Xcel, through our billing system, does not always know the end use of our particular product, in this case natural gas. As such, being able to carve out individual customers based on some of the recommendations in the bill would be very difficult at best. It would also, as Ms. Marshall alluded to, really cause us to need to go back to the drawing board with the commission as far as how is the cost allocated across customer classes. And just for reference, in our case, the impact to residential and small commercial customers for this particular program is less than 0.5%. For the commercial environment, small and large, the impact is 0.5%. So you can just keep that in perspective as how much actually customers are paying. It could be, you know, as low as 33 cents for a residential customer. For a very large industrial customer, it could be on average about $77 per month. So there is that. Just to keep that in mind as it's contemplated. That'll complete my comments.
Are there any questions for Mr. Boland? Seeing none, Mr. Boland, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Welty, do you have any further commentary at this time?
Mr. Chair and members, at this time I don't have any further comments. If members, after listening to the testimony, have strong opinions one way or another about the program, or if they'd like to see some sort of modification to the affordability program when the four-year pilot comes up, and we should have those discussions with the PUC and also the utilities, I would appreciate hearing from you. I think it's interesting that Mr. Boland testified that the large industrial customers could pay as much as $77 per month, and we've already talked about the assessment that's on farms of over $105 a month. So I think that there is some issue. I believe that we should be discussing the issue of fairness and how customers are assessed.
Does anyone have any questions or observations for Representative Welty before we move on? Well, this is an ongoing issue. Please, if you do have further thoughts about the issue, feel free to, and please do contact Representative Welty. Representative Welty, the House File 461 will be laid over at this time. Representative Knuth, House File 789. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 789 to be recommended to pass and send to the General Register, and I do have an amendment.
Members, I believe that's the A1 amendment. Is that correct, Representative Knuth?
Yes.
I presume that is intended to put the bill in the form in which you wish it to be considered.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
There is no discussion of the amendment. All those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Knuth, two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is House File 789 is a bill brought to me by the Public Utility Commission, and as amended, it leaves the current 10-month time frame for a rate case in place, but it allows the commission up to 90 days to finish the rate case if it determines that's needed. As we've heard from Mr. Haar before in this committee, there's four rate cases pending, and they've negotiated with the utilities to make the time frame work and not have the rate automatically approved because of the time for approval process because the time for approval has run out. If the time period runs out, it is automatically approved. And so they've taken the initiative to negotiate with the utilities that have rate cases, and this just gives them a little more flexibility. It would essentially if they deem necessary, that the commission deems necessary, could extend their period of time to determine these rate cases to 13 months. And I think we do need to have some conversation with the committee about is extending this time period the way to go, or do we need to have the commission have more staff so they can handle these rate cases in the time frames that we've had laid out. And I think that's something conversation the committee needs to have, as well as as the utilities. And then section two is a reviser's suggestion, basically to make a sentence make sense, because if you read it without the or inserted on line 2.32, it doesn't make sense. And with that, I stand for any questions.
I believe Representative Hoppe has a question. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, does this bill have anything to do with telecom companies at all, or is it just strictly for energy?
Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, and then it has nothing to do with, it's just with electric or gas utilities.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, do we have other testifiers on this bill, or is this just time for questions?
Representative Westrom, Mr. Haar is at the table. I don't know if he wishes to testify or not.
Well, maybe, why don't I just launch my question, because it would be pertinent to him if he is going to testify, otherwise he can answer it. Representative Knuth, you talked about hiring more staff or getting more time. My initial reaction is, just recently we've seen kind of a flutter of rate cases, but if you go over the last two decades, there hasn't necessarily always been a flurry of rate cases. And is this just a blip on the screen, or a potentially issue we can manage without going down the road of hiring more staff? Or, but if Mr. Haar has got other testimony, maybe that'll be answered in that discussion.
Well, I'm sure that is a question for Mr. Haar. Mr. Haar, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Weston, for that question. I would have to say that...
Mr. Haar, you do need to identify yourself.
I'm sorry.
For the record.
For the record, my name is Burl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. I would have to say that it is true that we presently have a flood of rate cases, four to be exact, two more in the offing. That is a larger volume at one time than we've seen in a while. However, the pace of rate case filings has definitely increased in the last several years, and I think it's due in large part to the changes that are taking place in the industry, the changes that are taking place in the economy. I do not expect rate cases to go into a dormant phase like they were for a period of time when the economy was booming. I don't see that happening anytime soon. Plus, the issues in the rate case, due to all of the policy changes and the changes that are likely to be coming from Congress, have grown far more complex than they were 10 years ago. So, to answer your question, while our current situation is a little unusual, I think it's going to be more the norm than the exception going forward.
Members, are there questions for Representative Knuth and Mr. Haar at this time? We do have an amendment. If there are no questions at this time, we do have the A2 amendment. I believe Representative Falk wishes to move the A2. Representative Falk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A2 amendment.
Representative Falk, you wish to explain the amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel that what Representative Westrom alluded to, that instead of offering to add more staff, that we could extend the time period to allow these rate cases to go through the process and to offer that to up to 24 months. The other part I look at on page 2 is the addition of the or. But also, upon looking at that, I'm a bit nervous, and maybe Dr. Haar, you could testify or speak to this, about when we're going to be potentially approving rate mechanisms for new transmission lines or other infrastructure without having to go through a certificate of need proceeding and basically substituting a priority project as defined as in the state transmission plan under 216B2425. Can you speak to that? Thank you.
Chair,
Mr. Hart.
On the second issue that you mentioned first, the section in which that language is found is a mechanism that was put into law a few years ago that allows utilities who have approved transmission facilities to petition the commission for approval of an automatic rate adjustment to recover the cost of that transmission project, that approved transmission project. There are two ways that utilities can get a project approved. One is through the certificate of need process, which is the more common way it's done. There's an alternative through the what's called the state biennial transmission plan process. This requires utilities to file every 2 years a biennial transmission plan, and if at that time that they submit the plan, they happen to have a project that is ready to go, there's a mechanism within that state biennial transmission plan process that will allow them to get a certification as a priority project and in effect get a certificate of need. It's an alternative to certificate of need. The processes are very similar. They both involve a significant amount of public input. The standards are virtually the same. It's just an alternative. If you change the or to an and, oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. I'm jumping ahead. Anyway, that's the significance of. Oh, okay. Yeah, there are those two processes. There are two options that are currently available that allow utilities, if they've been certified under either one of them, to then go to the commission and ask for approval for automatic rate adjustment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Knuth.
Thanks. Dr. Hard explained what the two different processes are, but I wanted to get a clarification from Representative Falk what's being repealed in the amendment.
Oh, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I do have copies to pass out of 216B2425, and basically subdivision 4 is just in 216B2425 states that certification of a project as a priority electric transmission project satisfies section 216B.243 certificate of need. A certified project on which construction has not begun more than 6 years after being placed on the list must be reapproved by the commission. Just looking through this, maybe Dr. Hardy can speak to this. It just seems that the state transmission is looking to circumvent some of the certificate of need public input process. And just what I was looking through at the process, it seems like there's a way that we avoid allowing the public to put their input into these new facilities.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Mr. Herr.
As I said, the alternative process provides for a significant amount of public input. There are opportunities to do that. The state planning process was an alternative put into law by the legislature several years ago as a means of having a mechanism to look at state planning processes and to address concerns about expediting certification of projects that are deemed to be in the public interest. And that's what's in the law. And by excluding, I'm not necessarily taking a position one way or the other on the bill, but just telling you the implications. By excluding that phrase that you've mentioned, you're basically saying that those projects that would go through the state planning process for their certification would not then be eligible to come to the commission, ask for a rate adjustment process to recover their cost. That mechanism would not be available to them.
Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Falk has probably brought up an important issue that this committee needs to talk about, but it actually seems like a much more significant step than what this bill is doing, and I think one that probably does at some point, if Representative Falk would like to introduce a bill, does merit some discussion by this committee if we want to revisit this and see what it's looking at. But I think I wasn't aware of the repealer until I got to committee, and that it seems like a large step. I'm not saying it's something we should or shouldn't do, but with the current bill and what we're trying to do with this, I think it creates a significant change in law and our process for permitting transmission lines. And so I'm not saying I don't necessarily support that, but I don't support the amendment to the bill.
Representative Paul.
Dr. Hart, could I ask, in 24-25, is it easier, or is there potential for less public input under that process than there is under Certificate of Need?
Mr. Hart. Mr. Chair, Representative, I would say they're comparable in that respect. I mean, I'd have to go through and I guess look specifically at the provisions, but everything that the Commission does is public. It has to be, and we go to great lengths to make sure that it's public, and certainly the state planning process is a fairly elaborate process that takes place over extended periods of time. There are meetings around the state. The commission has meetings to approve the plan. Those are all public. They're noticed. So I think there's plenty of opportunity for public input.
One final question, Representative Paul.
Final question. How do these projects get put on a priority list? Is the list just created based on utilities' thoughts or their designations about what would be the best? Because I'm just reading through the statute, it's the mechanism for creating this priority list. I'm trying to understand how that comes to be, because, as once again I'm interpreting, is that that priority list can be substituted in lieu for a certificate of need proceeding. So,
Mr. Chair, Representatives, yes, if a utility is part of its plan, has a project that it believes is ready to go, that it wants to get certification for, it can submit that and request that it be placed, be certified as a priority project, which has the same effect as a certificate of need. The requirements for that are similar to be honest with you, I wasn't prepared for your question, so I don't have it, you know, chapter and verse in my head, but the requirements are similar to what is involved in a certificate of need. The processes are fairly similar.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Representative Knuth. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's just, again, with all due respect to Representative Falk, I think we possibly could discuss this. We should discuss this at some point. I'd be happy to hear him out should a bill be introduced. But the only reason this section of law is in this bill is an accident of drafting and not having an or in the in line 2.32 or wherever that is in the statute. And so it's just trying to make a sentence make sense. And we can have this discussion now if the chair so desires, but I think it's perhaps something committee members should be a little more prepared for in terms of making this decision.
I think Representative Knuth, that's an excellent point. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I was going to echo Representative Knuth's comments. Write that down, Representative Knuth. This is something I agree with you wholeheartedly on.
Historic day.
This was,
will be duly noted in a minute.
Good deal. Mr. Chair, to be fair, though, this is a huge project, and over the past, it took 3 or 4 years for a project called CAPEX 2020 to come through here, which came through on a very bipartisan effort. It was an enormous piece of legislation designed primarily to bolster the transmission and collection and transmission system, to put some of our renewable energy mandates into play and actually move the power to the load centers. This, if I'm remembering this correctly, and it's catching us flat-footed because it's such a big, it seems like a small move to do this repealer, Representative, but there was a lot of work that went into putting it there, and there's a good reason that was put there. This needs to be revisited on a much grander scale if we're going to try this. And then before we tear down the fence, Grandpa said, always know why the fence was built in the first place, and I think we'd be pulling down a very important fence today if we did this at the flip of a hat. So I would request that we not support the amendment.
Representative
Mr. Chair.
Representative Falk.
I will take the comments in good nature, and I just want to push the discussion forward that I feel that we need to have public input in these proceedings, but I will withdraw the amendment, or withdraw the motion. Yeah, absolutely.
Grandpas are important. Representative Falk withdraws the amendment. Is there any further discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, unless I missed it, have we heard from any utilities on the change of extending this 90 days, or are we going to hear from any of them?
Well, Representative Westrom, I'm sure, as always, the utilities are present. No one has asked to testify, but if there's someone that you would like to call upon, we can see if they would be willing.
Chair, maybe we could subpoena them to testify. I know they often will speak from one voice. Maybe somebody could just tell us this 90-day clause seems to work.
Mr. Evans has decided to take the lead. Right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I don't think I can speak for all of the other utilities, but Xcel, as well as the other utilities, were involved in discussions with Dr. Haar and Representative Knuth to reach agreement on this language. So. We're content that this gives them the flexibility they need and doesn't impinge on our ability to operate our rate cases. So Xcel Energy supports this legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Wilson. Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, I assume part of the reason the 10 months has been in place is to avoid agency delay or drag for the utilities or for the business. I mean, is that the primary purpose? I mean, why do we even have to have 10 months otherwise? But is my assumption wrong? And I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying, you know, we could have 2 years, like the Falk Amendment just was proposing. We could have 5 years. 10 months seems like it's in there because it needs to have a balance of expediting it, but giving enough time to review. Is that the purpose? And then is 90 days an okay, which you've already said, but I'm just, can you just verify that that's kind of the purpose and what we're flirting with here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the purpose of the deadline is to keep the process moving and to make it predictable for all of the parties involved, the public, the utilities, the commission, and the department, and all the people who are involved. So that, as far as I know, that's the reason why these time limits are put in there, and yes, we think this bill puts the time limits in a reasonable way so that rate cases can be operated, put forward in a reasonable way.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Are there any other questions? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry to be a stickler here, but I'm just looking, Mr. Elis, at line 2.19, incorporating the A1 amendment, whether there's an extra 2 still left hanging. And I think the way that line would read with the amendment. Let me start with the whole sentence. If the commission finds that it has insufficient time during the suspension period to make a final determination of a case involving changes in general rates because of the need to make a final determination of any pending case involving changes in general rates under this section or section 237.075, the commission may extend the suspension period up to an additional 90 days to make the final determination after it has made make the final determination, period. So I think we're okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll
Representative Kalin.
I still think there's an extra 2 in there, but that's fine. I'll work with Mr. Elis to clean it up if we had to.
Okay. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none. Representative Knuth, Mr. Hard, the discussion we were having here is that in the bill, on page 2, line 18, the reference of section 237.05 is to telecom?
That's correct, sir. Yes, there is.
I think your response to Representative Hoppe earlier was that there was no reference to telecom in the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, that is that's existing language in the statute.
Mr. Chair. However, Mr. Ela,
I think the context here is that if the commission is busy with a telephone case that is preventing it from meeting the initial 10-month deadline, that can also be a reason to ask for the extra 90 days, so it wouldn't change anything with respect to telecom cases.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ellis is right. The Chapter 237 has still language in it relating to general rate cases. There are only a very small handful of companies that are still rate regulated and would even contemplate a rate case, and I wouldn't put any money that's going to happen anytime in my lifetime. So it's largely an obsolete section of statute.
So, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, it does reference the telecom section, but it's not changing those rate cases. It's just saying if those rate cases are adding to the workload of the commission and they deem it necessary to add an extra 90 days, they can do so. Am I correct in what I just explained? Mr. Ellis is nodding.
Yes.
So I'm assuming yes. Okay.
That's all we need is a nod from Mr. Ellis. Well, with that clarification, Representative Knuth, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion to the committee recommend House File 789 as amended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Any further discussion? Seeing no other discussion, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Knuth. Representative Kulik Jackson.
No, there was a meeting call today with everybody else.
Yeah, you don't hear something.
I got it.
I know that.
Yeah, I don't hear something.
Representative Jackson, you want to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House File 1038 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce.
Thank you. And Representative Jackson, you have an amendment?
I do, DE1 amendment. This amendment is the product of a vigorous debate and ultimate consensus by all stakeholders. And to quote Grandpa Beard, I think it's a well-built fence. I have Burl Haar with me to answer any questions.
Well, since obviously the amendment would put the bill in the form they wish to have it discussed, if there's no discussion to the amendment at this time. All those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative, two-year bill as amended.
I move that House File 1030 as amended be recommended pass and be referred to Committee on Commerce.
And would you care to explain the bill?
Yes, this bill authorizes the Public Utilities Commission to order a refund of overcharges to customers, which may have been implied in law but now is being made explicit. There was some language that was added to make clear that you know what exactly is meant, and in fact maybe better not meant, by granting this authority. For technical explanation, I'm going to refer to Burl Haar, who's in a much better position to answer any questions.
Mr. Haar.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members. as indicated, we worked with the utilities, several of the representatives of the various utilities, to come to compromise language on this bill, and it does give the commission authority to order refunds. Currently, if the commission determines that a rate has been applied in a manner that's inconsistent with statute or rule or commission order, and which has resulted in the company receiving revenues it's not entitled to receive, the commission basically has two options. It can ask the utility to give the money back, or it can ask the Attorney General's office to seek penalties. The commission has no direct way to address that issue. House File 1038 would provide the commission with authority like that possessed by most other state regulatory utility regulatory commissions to order refunds in such instances, so that the unauthorized gains that were received by the companies are returned to the people that are paying the bill. The bill does essentially four things. It authorizes the commission, after conducting a proceeding, to order a refund when it finds these circumstances warrant it. It would not limit the commission's existing authority to seek penalties or other remedies that are already in statute. It would add language to reaffirm existing prohibitions in statute against retroactively reestablishing rates that have already been deemed approved, what we call in the trade retroactive rate making. Fourth, it would place a six-year statute of limitation on the refund authority. The language of the bill also includes reference to Chapter 237, and we've made some modifications to that in line with the changes that were made to the language in Chapter 216B. There may be some further work to do on the Chapter 237 language. We are hoping to be able to have discussions to work that out, but we believe that we're moving in that direction. So hopefully that gives you an overview of what the bill is about, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Representative Jackson or Mr. Haar? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Haar, you mentioned a six-year time. Is there are there other places in statute that talk about a six-year window?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we chose that because that's the commercial statute of limitations, and that was sort of that was one of the compromise aspects of the bill. We didn't want any limitation. The utilities wanted something less, and we sort of compromised on the commercial statute of limitations.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Haar, you say you didn't want a six-year, your reasoning for that?
Mr. Chair, the commission has responsibility to ensure that ratepayers are paying reasonable rates, and this is one tool by which the commission can ensure that that happens. Sometimes the commission doesn't find out about incorrectly applied rates or rates that are in violation of statute until well after it's happened. and putting any kind of limitation on it puts a limit on how much the commission can do and how effectively the commission can carry out that duty. That's why we wanted to leave it open, but we certainly understand also the reasons for wanting to put a limit on it as well.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Har, the and maybe I read it too quickly, but at what interest rate is it refunded?
Mr. Har.
Mr. Chair, that isn't specified in the bill. that isn't addressed.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Har and Representative Kulik-Jackson, I'm just curious if somebody has inappropriately held my money for up to, well, 5.5 years or 6 years, and it conceivably could be an awful lot of money. My guess is that they've probably put that money to use, my money that I could have put to use, and there probably should be some sort of reasonable interest rate at which it would be refunded.
Mr. Chair, that was, as I said, that was not included in the proposed language. Could very likely be an issue that the commission would address it when that filing or when that situation arises, but you're right, it's not in the proposed language, and I understand your argument.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, sir.
Those we referred to the Commerce Committee, perhaps you should take this issue up with the chair.
I saw that. I heard that's a fine committee. and it's got a, and even better, there's a division, the telecommunications division of that committee, that really does an excellent job. Much smarter chair of that division.
I've heard that rumor. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Har or Representative Jackson, either one, I'm looking at the delete all amendment, and it seems that the major difference is the retroactive rulemaking was added to each of these three subdivisions. Dr. Har, was that part of the PUC's, I understand this is a PUC bill, was that PUC direction? Is that where this addition came from?
Mr. Har, Representative Beard, actually the additional language was proposed by the utilities, and we went through several iterations of what that language should be, and this was the language that we agreed upon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none. Representative Jackson.
I renew my motion that House File 1038 be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on Commerce, please. As amended.
As amended.
By DE1, the well-built fence.
There being no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed to the Commerce Committee. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Would you like a motion to send this to the General Register?
Division.
I believe that would be the appropriate motion, Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to recommend remove House File 602, recommend its passage to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Beard. And do you want to explain your bill?
Yes. House File 602, Mr. Chairman, is a pretty straightforward bill. It is an agency bill. PUC requested this change. There's two parts to it. The first one, I think, is because of the ever-changing world of technology. You'll notice on line 1.08, audio electronic recording is added. In the past, rules required them to actually magnetically tape. Of course, nobody does magnetic taping anymore. It's all digital, which I believe is some sort of an optical device. And so that would, believe it or not, we have to put that in law to allow them to do that. The second portion of the bill, make sure it's the right bill, yes, involves, eliminates reference to the cold weather rule in statute, and there's a reason, I guess, that we do this. You'll see that on page, the backside, page 2. And if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I can have Dr. Barr explain why that's important to us to eliminate the cold weather rule language.
Mr. Har.
Mr. Chair, thank you, members. Cold weather rule is the cold weather disconnection rule. Of course, you're all familiar with that. And as you know, that was substantially modified a couple of sessions ago. And actually, the rule was taken out of commission rule where it had been for years and years and put into statute and modified and expanded. But because the requirements had been in rule form for so long, the cold weather rule became sort of a term of art, if you will, and there are actually references to that in statute, and the purpose of the amendments here are simply to clarify that, to make sure that people aren't confused by that and that those references are no longer in statute, and it's merely intended to avoid confusion.
Is there any discussion to the bill? Representative Hoppe.
Mr. Chair, has anyone asked for a roll call on this yet?
Not yet, Representative Hoppe.
I'm curious.
You are.
Mr. Chair.
Is there, Representative Weston?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, try to recall reading some summary. Does this bill also deal with having utilities pay for recording costs, court reporters? Is that the same bill? That's the next bill. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Chair, if you'll just hold on for just a moment, we'll have that.
Is there any further discussion to this bill?
Trying to move it along.
Well, no roll call having been requested. Representative Beard, perhaps you would like to move this bill to the consent calendar. I don't know if that would be a consideration or not.
Well, that would prevent people from offering juicy amendments to it on the floor, I believe, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to do that.
Yes, perhaps before we proceed, Mr. Pomeroy points out, or Mr. Ellis points out by way of Mr. Pomeroy, and then the next bill, House Bill 603, it deletes a line that is not deleted in 602, same section of statute.
Okay,
so
that by me one more
if
time,
we Chair? Pass 602 before 603, it would be deleted. If we pass 603 before 602, I believe it would not.
Mr. Eloff is an amazing man, Mr. Chairman.
So, Mr. Beard or Mr. Haar, we would like some clarification about your desires here. Mr. Haar.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representatives, I'm sorry for the confusion on my part, I guess. House File 603 relates to a similar sort of similar area. It obviously deals with the same subsection there. House File 603, though, would give the Commission authority to when it deems it necessary, to require the services of a court reporter to come in to make a transcript of its hearing, of its proceeding. As you can see in House File 603, Section 1, or Subdivision 6 of the current law, the language that is struck is the language that says the commission has to make the whole provision says the commission has to make a recording unless the commission provides a hearing reporter to record the proceeding. And what we're doing by striking that and adding then the next section is we're just trying to make that consistent in the context of that bill. Probably it was a draft or mistake on my part to include both provisions.
and or the audio recording in the housekeeping bill too. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, it would appear to me that in 603, the strike of line portion line 9 all line 10 is, if we left that in there, would be permissive language, wouldn't require. Oh, wait a minute. Could the fix be then just on strike this in the next bill?
I guess we could.
I think when we get to the next bill, we can take care of it, Mr. Elif, by unstriking those two lines.
I guess I'm not clear on which way you prefer.
Representative Beard, it's up to you, I guess.
I think
Dr. Hart has decided whether you want that line included or not.
Mm-hmm. And then take care of it in 603.
Yeah, well, actually, we could. Yeah, there's a couple ways to proceed. But if we just, in 602, the bill is actually before us at the moment. If we just deleted subdivision 6 on line 1.8, 1.9, and 110, then the next bill to come up could address the digital recording situation. So, Mr. Chair, if you'll entertain an author's amendment, I will move to strike lines 1.8, 1.9, and 110 of House File 602.
Well,
we have that motion. I believe that Mr. Elif suggests that the motion actually would be just to delete section 1 of the bill.
Of the bill, yes. It wouldn't actually delete from statute, it's deleted from this particular bill.
Correct.
That would be my motion.
Very well. Do members understand the motion? It is to delete section 1 of House Bill 602. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Beard, then, to your bill as amended.
As amended, to recommend to pass and be referred to the consent calendar.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is adopted. Bill is referred to the consent calendar. Representative Beard, House File 603.
Mr. Chairman and members,
this has already been subject to considerable discussion.
Well, the 50 place File 603 in front of you and move its passage and be referred to the consent calendar as well. And since we've heard most of the discussion, I can be very brief. Mr. Chairman, lines 1.8 takes care of the problem previously discussed. And this subdivision 6A beginning on line 1.13. Mr. Chairman, I think the Dr. Hart can speak to it more eloquently than I can, but it involves the services of court reporters, particularly in significant rate cases, where instead of having the commission make available recordings of proceedings and have other people transcribe them after the fact, sometimes it's much more effective and efficient just to have court reporters on site in real time transcribing the proceedings as they're occurring. And then there's hard copy for all the parties immediately upon conclusion of the hearing. That charge, of course, will be passed along to the parties in the rate case or in the hearing, and perhaps I'll let Dr. Haar clarify that just a little bit more for us.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Beard. Now, I think you explained it very well, that the intention here is to give the commission authority simply to request to arrange for the services of a court reporter in large cases. I mean, we're not thinking of doing, the intention here is not to use this in each and every hearing. That's not what we're planning to do. The intention would be to use it when it's deemed that a written transcript is important for everyone's understanding. We believe, just as Representative Beard very well explained it, that this would expedite that, would make transcripts available for parties that would benefit all parties, and including the commissioners and commission staff. This is a way of helping expedite and manage our workload as well, giving us another resource to use.
Is there anyone
in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? Representative Johnson, there are references to telephone companies and telecommunications. I should ask if you find any necessity of hearing this bill in your committee.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. I'll refer to the lead Republican on the telecom, Mr. Hoppe, I believe it is, Representative Hoppe. I think that the typical protocol is if there's no major or even minor public policy issues involved, we're okay with it not going there.
Thank you. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Haar, or Representative Beard, who's paying for this right now, and is this shifting it to a different party, or what's the net effect of what will happen under this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, currently court reporters are not brought into commission proceedings unless one of the parties wants to make arrangements to do that. If they do, they will pay the bill oftentimes, or I believe parties sometimes arrange to split those costs. But currently, the party that makes arrangements for the court reporter services will pay the bill. This would keep that the same. The difference here is that the commission would have the ability to decide when a transcript is needed and have then the authority to assign the cost of that, which, you know, in the scheme of things are not great. They're small in terms of their overall cost of a rate case, but assign those to the primary parties in the primary companies in the proceedings. That would be the effect.
Representative Wester.
Chair, Mr. Hart. So ultimately it's transferring authority to you as the PUC, and you can order it, or do the parties still have to request it, and at that point you decide how to divide it up if Party X wants it, Party Z doesn't, but Party Z might benefit from it as well. You decide that, or are you going to now be able to say Party X and Z, we're going to tell you have to have a transcription and a court reporter, where now they currently make their own decision?
Mr. Haar. Mr. Chair, it would not eliminate the ability of parties to independently arrange for court reporter services if none are provided. That still is possible. It would continue to be possible. This would give the commission the ability to say, if there were no services provided or contemplated, would give the commission the ability to say, we think a transcript would be beneficial in this case. We're going to arrange for that to happen, and the commission would decide who are the parties, typically the filing party, but the rate case would be whoever the filing company would be, would pick up those costs. And that could vary depending upon the nature of the case, but it would be the primary proponents in the case.
Last question then, Mr. Chair, Mr. Haar. The utilities aren't flooding down to testify. I assume there's peace in the valley on this, or are they just keeping their mouth shut because you're the regulator and they know when they should open their mouth and when they shouldn't say anything else? I mean, I feel the air.
That may just be an alternative definition of peace.
Well, I ask that in some seriousness. I guess utilities, if you want to speak up, you better speak up now, otherwise we're going to pass this bill. So.
Well, Representative Weston, we did ask if anybody wanted to testify, and we don't seem to have any takers. Is there any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Pierce.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll move House File 603 to pass and be referred to the consent calendar.
All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed to the consent calendar.
Members, is there any further business to come before the committee today? Seeing none, we are adjourned.